At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
All right, Rebecca. We've been building to this since April when we did our first It Book Knockout round, which has become a fun monthly structure for us. I think we've had some good conversations. We get to talk about books that we may or may not read ever, but that are kind of out there and let people know what's going on. And then use our sort of internal divining rods to try to lead us to what we think the It Book of the year is going to be. Today, it's not the December It Book of the Month because December really falls off a cliff when it comes to new releases. We're going to do the It Books of the Year. And I thought about a lot of different structures. For those of you listening, Rebecca has no idea what the structure of this is going to be. That's part of the fun.
Your favorite format.
I don't live for much, but I have a few things. And this is one of them. And I was thinking to myself, the average American reads about 12 books a year, right?
Yep.
So what if we made a basket for that person of the It Books of the Year, where if you wanted to do the year in reading and you wanted to get a sense of what the books of the year were, these are the 12 you would read. So what I did is I made a long list of 24 contenders.
Okay.
And from those, we will pick 12 and we'll go down one by one. And for each, the first pass, I'm just going to ask us to do a yes, a no, or a maybe. We don't have to keep count. We're just an automatic yes, an automatic no, or a maybe is what we're going to do. And then we'll see how many yeses we have. And do we have to add or subtract yeses at the end of the run? Does that sound okay to you?
Yes. This is so much better than what I was thinking I might have to do, which was at some point face Colleen Hoover against Rebecca Yarros.
Well, here's a hot tip. Colleen Hoover, I didn't add to the 24 books of the year. Maybe we can talk about that. Just, I think the moment it feels real over all of a sudden. And
I mean, it was part of 2023, but it's not at the beginning, but it's not part of the ending.
Not part of the ending. It ends with thus, I guess, would be the name of the book for Colleen Hoover right now. And the order they were going to go in is just the order they occurred to me. This has nothing to say about, I just like, okay, I'm going to write down 24. I got past 24. And this is what I have.
So we're just going off the dome here. This wasn't any, like, you didn't Google biggest books.
Not entirely true. Once I had my list, I looked around. It's like, did I miss anything? Is there anything I'm going to feel like a real chump? And I don't remember if, to be perfectly honest, I don't remember if I did any emendations that way.
All right. I'm into this.
So I guess before we get to that, do you want to say anything about trends or, I don't know, do we want to say anything about the year so far? Let's do this. Good year, bad year for a fan of books, what'd you say?
Oh, good year. Good year. We're coming in this moment straight off of our recording for the Book Riot Podcast Patreon of our favorite reads of the year. And we knocked through way more than 10 each. There were a lot of great books this year. It's a good year for books. And the internet did a lot for books this year. Like, you can't talk about this year without talking about the impact of book talk. I don't know how much longer that's going to last. I don't personally care about Romantasy or the Colleen Hoover Project. But sold a lot of books, hooked a lot of people on new ways of reading. I ultimately think that's good. So, yeah, good year. Good year for books.
And I don't have any sense of, now, there's one book on this list, of course, that is very much a book talk phenomenon. I have very little sense of the rest of them have any connection to book talk. I'm sure they get talked about because that's social media. But in terms of being a phenomenon there that drove a bunch of sales, I don't have a good sense of it all. If you know out there, shoot me an email, firstedition@bookriot.com, and you can tell me that there was a big, vaster wild hive out there cooking around. All right, so let's get into it. You know what? I just hit a sorting function, and now everything is reversed alphabetical versus the random.
Oh, no.
This is fun. It's
undo,
fine.
Undo.
No, it's
undo.
Okay. It's all right. Should we go back to my original sort of, let's go back to my original off the dome ordering, because Let's start there. Okay, well, let's start here. The Fourth Wing by Rebecca Yarros came out in the middle of the year, became a phenomenon, broke the internet, broke bookstores. They couldn't keep them in track. It introduced you and I regretfully to the term spredges. Iron Flame, the follow-up, has sold remarkably well. We're getting a series. It has ushered in the age of the romanticy that could be here for, you know, 3,000 years, or it could be an 18-month phenomenon. But The Fourth Wing by Rebecca Yarros is our first candidate to be in the Book of the Year. Rebecca, what say ye?
Today's episode is brought to you by Song of the Silk's Realms by Judy I. Lin. Xu Wei is a talented young musician who was orphaned at a young age. Her sole family is a kindly uncle, but then her uncle is killed, and she is, of course, devastated. With no family and no patron, Xu Wei is facing the possibility of a lifetime of servitude playing the qin. Then one night, she is unexpectedly called to perform for the enigmatic Duke Meng. He surprises Xu Wei further with an irresistible offer. Serve as a musician in residence at his manor for 1 year, and he'll set her free of her indenture. But the Duke's motives become increasingly more sus when he and Xu Wei barely survive an attack by a nightmarish monster. It's like, what? What's going on here? So this book is a sweeping epic romanticy that follows a talented young musician who is swept away to the celestial realm by an enigmatic young duke. And who doesn't want to be swept away to the celestial realm by an enigmatic young duke? She's living all our dreams, honestly. Make sure to check out the new book. And thanks again to Song of the Six Realms by Judy I. Lin for sponsoring this episode. Today's episode is brought to you by Tor Books. So if you are a fan of epic fantasy, if you're a fan of Scott Lynch and or Joe Abercrombie, but you want something a little different, you want a hero who's like a bit of a mess, then The Silver Blood Promise by James Logan is for you. In it, Academy dropout slash disgraced noble heir Lacan Gordova's life is in shambles. All he's got going for him is, one, he is a card sharp of considerable skill, and two, a lot of, maybe potentially a little too much, wine. Those are, you know, those are the positives. So when the bizarre murder of his father robs him of even the off chance of redemption, Lacan decides to make amends another way. He's going to unravel the mystery behind the killing, even if it takes him to the underbelly of Sophrona, a city of danger, secrets, and merchant princes. Finding the truth is one thing. Finding the truth and staying alive is like a whole other thing. So make sure to check out The Silver Blood Promise by James Logan on sale May 7th. And thanks again to Tor Books for sponsoring this episode.
Maybe.
Okay. I think the burden of proof then is now, why is it not a yes? How can it not be a yes at this point?
Because if the project here is, like, if our task is 12 books that the general reader will enjoy, this has been big on book talk, and it's been big in, like, the romance fantasy circles, but I have not seen it like cross into general readers. Like, is the general reader interested in dragon writers who do it? I don't know. If we're trying to give the general reader a sense of what this year in books was like, it has to be a yes. But if
I think
it's 12
that's
books
what we're trying
for
to
the
do.
General reader.
I think I think it is. You can only read 12 books this year, and the goal is to get as much coverage as you can over
I
what
see.
The year
okay,
in
well,
books
then,
was.
Then it's a yes.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Yeah, well, some of that was just yes. Alignment. I think maybe yep. That's a different list. Maybe when we're after darking at some point, we could say the best books for the general reader. But okay. Up next. Again, at this point of the year, it feels like it's been a million years, but it sold so well, and it's still, I think, out there a little bit. I wonder how many Christmas trees will be under still, but it's Spare by, I don't know how you refer to this guy now, his royal whatever.
Prince Harry.
Prince Harry. Did he give it up? They had to revoke his whatever? I don't know where we are now on this. But Spare by the former prince, artist currently or formerly known as Prince Harry. That's Spare.
That's a no from me. I don't think
tell
so.
Me more about that.
I don't think it cracks the top 12. It's not a literary event. This is a celebrity event.
Yep.
People who care about the royal family were reading this book. Book people who aren't interested in the royal family, I don't think, went there. And maybe we're going to get to Britney Spears later. But I do think an interesting distinction there is that I saw a lot of just book people pick up Britney Spears. Or there's maybe there's more crossover between Britney and general readers. But I'm a no on Prince Harry, also because it was so early in the year. But I think everyone who wanted to read this has read it. Either you were looking forward to it and you got it pretty quickly, or you just don't care anymore.
Interesting enough for us, the next one up is The Woman in Me by Britney Spears.
That's going to be a maybe
for
me.
I have a hard time seeing how that's a maybe and Harry's a no. Don't you think just in raw copies sold? And listen, I kind of see where you're coming from, but Harry and Meghan, like, this is an active disaster scene, what's going on with their lives. Whereas Britney, this is telling the story of the disaster. Her career is over.
I think that the Britney story is more culturally significant than the publicity spin project that is Harry and Meghan. Like, I support their project, but I don't know. I'm there's a lot of subjectivity happening.
No, here, that's why we're doing this. Is not scientific. This is vibes, and we're going to get weird cognitive and emotional dissonance. That's fine.
Yeah, and if we had 24 picks for the year, I would put Britney on the list, but I'm going to say maybe, but that's really just because I don't want to say
you're
no.
You're not ready to let
in
go.
The first round. Yeah.
Okay, up next, for a while was probably the most talked about book in the U.S., at least in mid to late summer. That's The Guest by Emma Klein, the story of an adrift, attractive, scheming, exploited young woman during, I guess it's about a week long. I'm not even sure it's a week in the Hamptons. The book most likely to be picked up and turned into an A24 movie, I would say at this point. But The Guest by Emma Klein is your next under consideration.
Yeah, I'm a strong maybe on this one. I don't think it says anything that's particularly 2023. It doesn't also break like new ground in the kind of book it is. It's just a really strong entry in that kind of book. In a couple years, I don't think we're still talking about The Guest by Emma Klein. Like, I'm not putting it in the time capsule.
You are keeping your powder dry. That is what I feel is happening right now so far. But that
possibly.
Is fine. That is fine. That's
I might
what
be sandbagging.
Do. That's a lot. Up next, the Barnes & Noble and Amazon pick for Best Book of the Year, a literary fiction hardcover bestseller, one that you and I have really enjoyed. We're just talking about The Heaven Earth Grocery Store by James McBride.
Yes, yes, 1,000 times yes.
Okay. Need we say any more about it at this
point? It's perfect.
Okay.
Everyone should read it. This is the book of the year. Barnes & Noble got it right. Amazon got it right. It should have been nominated for the National Book Award.
In some circles, our next contender might be all those things you just said. It's Tom Lake by Ann Patchett. This is
a strong maybe.
Very good Patchett.
Yes.
It's hard to think that the story is especially au courant, though it has a COVID frame story that I don't know what that means exactly. I mean, we didn't do a close reading of Tom Lake, you and I, but we both enjoyed this book.
Yeah, I don't think the COVID frame story is essential to it. That could easily be moved to like the kids are home for the holidays or there was a big ice storm or something.
We're all back for grandpa's funeral or something.
There are
like
a million
that.
Ways to get the gang back together.
Yeah.
I think it's a strong maybe, kind of for the same reasons as The Guest. It's a really great example of the kind of book it is, but there's nothing really new about it or nothing particularly 2023 about it. But
I'm sorry,
is
you
very
said maybe?
For the
maybe?
Yeah. Okay, yeah. Maybe. It is very appealing for the general reader, but that's currently a strong maybe. And I'm, I'm keeping my powder dry. You're not wrong.
Again, we're now almost a year away from some of these that came out earlier in the year. This one feels like I had to double check on my publication date, because it feels like it's been with us for a while. And I don't mean that in terms of a slag, just like it's been around and I've seen people talk about and it's been on lists. It's Poverty by Matthew Desmond. Matthew Desmond's inquiry into the cycles, nature, and endurance of American poverty.
That's a yes.
That's a yes. Me. Say more about that.
Mm-hmm. Very 2023. Talk about like you want to understand one of the most important issues that's happening in the world, in the U.S. right now. Matthew Desmond takes a terrific approach and writes about these very difficult things in a way that does make it possible for the reader to hang through it. I think this probably feels like homework reading for a lot of general readers. It's the kind of thing that
I don't think it is. It's not that long, by the way, for those considering. It's not super long. Like, I mean, you're going to learn some stuff, but it...
I don't think it feels like homework reading, but like most folks, I think, who are just going to pick up their 10 or 12 books a year are, I think, more reaching for books as a form of entertainment. But if I get to slide in some like, this will be good for you, and it won't be unpleasant in the ways that you think it's going to be, I'm going with poverty for sure.
Okay. Next up, I had a spreadsheet with 24 titles that didn't have this one on it. And then a little avatar appeared in my Google Doc, and it was Oprah's face. And it made sure to include The Covenant. No, I'm kidding. I had it here from the beginning. The Covenant of Water by Abraham Verghese, his totemic Oprah stan-inducing multi-generational family story of a curse involving drowning. That's a weird AI-generated way of describing what that book was in my mind. The Covenant of Water, it sold terrifically well. A crowd pleaser that clocks in at 700 plus pages.
It's long.
Really affirming that cutting for stone. Fluke is the wrong word, but he was not a one-hit wonder. Abraham Verghese was not. Covenant of Water, considered for your consideration. Yes, no, or maybe.
Yes,
as a book.
I think it's a yes. It depends on what the rest of these 24 are. I could see a case for knocking it off. It has sold more than 1 million copies. Oprah spent 4 months trying to move units of The Covenant of Water. We've never seen Oprah do something like that with one of her
Instagramming selection. About it, the number of books it sold. No, ain't never like, seen that just, from W before.
Right. And so I have some big questions about like how many of those million copies actually got read, because this is a big book. It isn't like it moves around in time. It's not totally clear. Like if you are a casual reader who doesn't have a lot of experience moving, you know, between like multiple generations in a story and picking up like subtle threads of character that aren't like there are not flashing lights here to be like, this is the thing from the first section of the book that you probably don't remember. Like there is a lot of sort of like active memory stuff required in the reading process. I wouldn't be surprised if this one was also like pretty highly DNF'd because it can be kind of challenging. So yeah, I don't know. It's also, I mean, a big old fashioned novel, but not particularly 2023-ish. It is the grand literary like publishing industry mystery of the year.
Yeah.
Or maybe of the last decade of like what happened.
What the hell happened?
Yeah. So I'm going to say yes with the reserve of like this one might get, you know, tippled off.
If you're new to the mundane minutia of the publishing world, Verghese was under contract with Random House for a was it a $3 million advance?
It was seven figures. I don't remember exactly what the number
somewhere
was.
Somewhere in the low to mid seven figures advance for his next book. That did not happen, and he moved to Grove, and much to Grove's delight, has delivered what has to be one of the most profitable books they've ever done. We don't know anything about the terms or anything of what happened. There's some confusing messaging even from him about what manuscripts may or may not have existed and why things happened. I think that obfuscation is on purpose. Maybe sometime we'll know. It's interesting that we just had this conversation because the inner workings of publishing, especially in the modern age, has been a topic of the last several years. And I'm adding this book because I think it is zeitgeisty in terms of his concerns, even if not a lot of people are going to read a university press title by an academic. It's Big Fiction by Dan Sinikin, which I'm biased towards because I did interview him and I'm very interested in this. But I will say this. There were excerpts and reviews of this in places I would not have expected. The New Yorker and Harper.
All over the place.
It was all over the place around. And even now there's still pieces coming out. So I don't think it's a stretch to include it on this list. Tell me if I'm wrong. Now, where it makes it beyond this, let me start here. Was I right to at least consider this as a long list title here, Rebecca? No, not even to consider it. Okay, fine. So it's a no. All right, we're going to move along.
Yeah, I don't think in a general, if we got 24 books for the year for a general reader, that a history of publishing stuff is going to make it. But I loved this for you, and seeing that it was everywhere, and like they got me, whoever was the primary publicist for this, like A plus work, because the 2 or 3 weeks around when this book came out, I clicked on probably a dozen headlines that were things like the man who invented fantasy, and then like the problem with literary fiction, and they were all
the death excerpts. Of the author.
Right. And they were all excerpts from Big Fiction, where I was like, okay, fine, I will buy this book.
I thought the book was really interesting, and I don't necessarily track with some of the readings of the text itself, and even some of the conclusions. Well, Sinekin does a pretty good job of not trying to evaluate, but like the death of the author stuff is like, I don't know. It doesn't feel that much different to me than it did 10 or 15 years ago, and even in the 90s. I know the sales are a lot different, but Covenant of Water, Tom Lake, like these are books, if they came out in 1991, they would have sold. Now, maybe they would have sold 5X. But some of these books we're going to talk about wouldn't have existed in 1991. So I'm much more, it's not surprising coming from me, who's, if not an Amazon apologist, I'm like, they're good and bad, that's come along with these modern things. And it wasn't all perfect in 1991. That wasn't the end of the good times for books.
Right.
Or 1958. I mean, there was no halcyon days. There were no salad days that if we could have frozen in amber, we'd like to live there. Okay, so moving on. Now, meta discourse around publishing in books definitely turned into narrative when we get to Yellowface by Arf Quang, who burst onto the scene with the Poppy War, I think reached a new level of reach and commercial viability and profile with Babel, and then decided to turn around and do a reflective, satirical, enigmatic, I would say, hard to find much purchase on what the specific and exact mode of critique is in Yellowface. Mm-hmm. But Yellowface by Arf Quang is our next candidate for It Books
of the year. Yeah, that's going to be a yes from me. It moves quickly. It sucks you in. It's really sticky. It's very of the moment. And it's challenging in ways that I think every single last one of us needs to be challenged. I think that's also part of the reason that it didn't stick around longer or get placement on more of the best books of the year lists, is that folks maybe in anticipation of this were thinking, oh, like this is going to be an indictment of a certain kind of person, and I'm going to get to feel good about myself while I read it. And Quang gives you some of those moments and then comes right around the next corner with something that is indicting of that perspective, or, you know, shows that all of this is much more complicated than any of us wrangle with on a regular basis, or can really get our arms all the way around. I think this would be a terrific book club book if you have a book club that's willing to like be a little shouty and a little bit messy. There's so much to talk about, and it does, like, if you were going to talk about a book that speaks to the state of books and reading and what happens in publishing, but also like what's going on with the ways we understand identity and who gets to tell what kinds of stories, and also social media and cancel culture. Like, there's a bunch of, you know, big cultural hooks to this one that I think a general reader could get into.
It's interesting. It kind of fell between, it's an accomplished book, and when it came out, it felt like a very big deal. And then there was quite a bit of radio silence from the reading world at large, I think, for the reasons you just outlined. It also kind of fell between the feel-good upmarket hits like Covenant of Water or Tom Lake, and as some of the books we'll talk about here, again, we're talking about big five AAA literary fiction titles that delivered. It kind of fell between those, I feel like.
I think that's a good point. It's not feel-good, and it's also not a, like, useful, purposeful literary downer.
Yeah.
Right.
Up next, speaking of useful, purposeful literary downers, the winner, the recent winner of the Booker Prize, Paul Lynch's Prophet Song, which I have not read. I've read everything on the list so far, just except for Spare, pardon me, or Fourth Wing. So when I mean that, I've read not the biggest selling books on this list. I felt like I've read everything. I know enough about the rest. This I feel like I have the least sense of because it's new and it's literary fiction. It's not even out in the U.S. It doesn't come out in the U.S. till December 5th. So this is a near future dystopia about a hard right Irish government and a family that gets caught up with it. That's about as much as I know. I will read this. I tend to read all the Bookers. The timing was striking after mm-hmm. a weekend of violence in Dublin that I don't fully have my arms around, but it's certainly around a right wingish sensibility, and that's what Lynch is talking about here. Again, not out in the U.S. Not it's about Ireland. It's pretty hard lit fiction, though it is spec fic, which I think is, you know, adds a little bit of I don't know. It feels more of the moment than if it were just even realist fiction or historical fiction at this moment. What do we do with this at this point? What does the Booker give you to enough over the line that eventually we will consider it one of the it books of the year?
No, by itself it doesn't. The Booker can go a lot of ways, and often one of the ways is a literary darling, and the literary darling is not the thing that goes in the basket of 12 books. I think it just has to be a maybe. I have also not read it, so maybe if one of us had read it, we would have a strong argument.
If it's good, it matters to us. If we think it's good, it will matter to us. I mean, yeah, that's just the way this goes.
But it's kind of a hard pitch. Literary fiction about a place that's different from the U.S. where most of our readers and listeners, the hypothetical reader we're talking about, is based in the U.S. here.
Yeah.
Challenging literary fiction about somewhere else with maybe like systems and politics you don't understand. I think that's a pretty high bar to clear, but it's not a definite no. Like if it's great and it gets talked about a lot, it could crack it. But since it's not out in the U.S. yet, it's impossible to know. So I think it's a maybe.
It sounds like it has the possibility to be a bit more narrative driven than some of these others are, just because like A Family on the Run from the Secret Police, if that's what it's about, that could move on rails, right?
Great.
And have some other stuff going on, but it could go a bunch of different ways.
Yeah, I will await your review.
An interesting counterpoint is Blackouts by Justin Torres, which won the National Book Award a week or so ago, which I read and I've talked about before. An elliptical, evocative, experimental, pretty striking piece of literary inquiry into... I've read some more about it. It's more grounded in historical reality than I thought. That one of the particular people that is the text that's being investigated, that's been blacked out, that's passed from one person to the other, is based on the work of a real woman and her investigation into the varieties of human sexuality in the U.S. in the 1930s. I don't know how much that adds to my reading of it now, but it's pretty, this is not something you're going to give a general reader. It's not going to sell very well. This one will probably be DNF'd a lot because you've got to give it a read. You've got to pay attention and think and focus and be okay with not knowing what's going on. I really liked it, and that has a little bit of bearing here, that it won the National Book Award matters. But in terms of the number of people reading it, I'm just not sure what to do with this particular title. Rebecca, help me out as someone who's looking at it from the outside right now.
This is one I haven't read yet, but that I will, for all of the reasons you just mentioned, and that I wish I felt like I could say, yes, that goes in the basket of books for the general reader. Maybe it should, just by virtue of the fact that it does communicate a lot of things that are, you know, going on right now in the ways that we are trying to re-understand or more correctly understand history and bring back voices that were silenced or underappreciated in history. As I'm saying this, I think I'm talking myself into saying yes to it. Our job is not to make the general reader read these 12 books.
No.
It's to put together the basket of books.
If you want to know, you're going to read this book.
About
you're going to get through it if you want to know about the year in books. I agree.
Right.
I think I agree with you on that.
I think I'm going to say yes here, because if I put in more than 12, we can always eliminate some, but I'm going to say yes to this one.
Okay, so that's a yes. Up next, interesting to have these such weird sort of pairings when you go from one to the other. Because also dealing with difficult social issues, but in the form of macabrely absurdist narrative devices. It's Chain Gang All-Stars by Nana Kwame Ajay-Brenya, which was on the New York Times 10 Best of the Year. It's been all over the place here. It was a finalist for the National Book Award. It was on the Book Riot list. Several of our editors called it their favorite book of the year. Chain Gang All-Stars, Rebecca, what are we going to do with that one?
I'm going to give that one a yes for all of those reasons. Like, it's dealing with cultural issues. It's got the literary genre crossover stuff that is so popular right now that gives people a way into a story about something difficult that, yep, like, they might not want to read straight up downer literary fiction about these ideas, but a genre twist that's well executed can make that palatable and interesting and maybe even fun. And it was just everywhere. Like, the pure zeitgeistiness of a book like this. Like, I think I saw it on Instagram every day for the last 7 months.
Okay, there you go.
So, yes.
Today's episode is brought to you by Greenleaf Book Group. No summer vacation should be without a great read, and I don't know about you, but I am partial to mysteries and thrillers for my hot month reads. It's hot girl reading summer, always over here. And from the award-winning librettist of Legally Blonde, the musical, and the screenwriter of Freaky Friday, Heather Hawk, comes the page-turning psychological thriller, The Trouble with Drowning. So when author Eden Hart floats into Tucson's Antigone Books in all her dazzling perfection to give a reading, Kat, a struggling writer, can't help but compare herself. Thankfully, Kat's life starts to take on its own Eden-like glow when her literary future takes shape and she falls madly in love with Jacob. As demons from her past begin to surface, Kat's mental health craters and this halcyon dream slips through her fingers. For the fastest-paced, slow burn you won't be able to put down, be sure to check out The Trouble with Drowning by Heather Hawk on Amazon or your retailer of choice. And thanks again to Greenleaf Book Group for sponsoring this episode. Today's episode is brought to you by Harper Muse, publisher of Troubled Waters. Troubled Waters is an intimate portrait of two generations, a granddaughter and a grandmother, coming to terms with what it means to be family, Black women, and alive in a world on fire. In heartfelt lyrical prose, Mary Inez Hegler weaves an unforgettable story of the climate crisis, Black resistance, and the enduring power of family. Narrated by Janice Abbott Pratt and written by climate justice writer Mary Inez Hegler, the Troubled Waters audiobook is available everywhere May 7th. It follows Corinne as she plans to stage a dramatic act of resistance and peels back the scabs of her family wounds and puts her safety in jeopardy. Both grandmother and granddaughter must bring their unspoken secrets into light to find a path to healing. Known for her essays that dissect and interrogate the climate crisis, drawing heavily on her personal experience as a Black woman with deep roots in the South, Mary Inez Hegler brings us her first work of fiction titled Troubled Waters. Make sure to pick it up. Thanks again to Harper Muse, publisher of Troubled Waters, for sponsoring this episode.
Speaking of debuts, Late Season Surges was named the Barnes & Noble Discoverer Pick of the Year, also made the Amazon list. It's been on some other lists, too. That wasn't it for The Berry Pickers by Amanda Peters, which is a literary, I don't know if you'd call it. The plot's going to sound like a thriller, but it's not. It's pretty straight up upmarket to literary fiction about a girl who was abducted, an indigenous girl who was abducted by... how much is this a spoiler? Disappears and was abducted. I'll say less about it then. And it goes back and forth in time and perspective to tell this story. It's a fairly simple story. It's more about the people's experience of their lives and looking backwards and forwards. It's somewhat a social issue novel, but kind of not really. It's kind of much smaller than that in terms of domestic, but I think that's also part of the point. I think it's very recommendable for people that are looking for a book that's compelling to read, not too challenging, but feels like it has some substance to it. So that's The Berry Pickers by Amanda Peters.
I'm a maybe on this. I'm really interested in what Amanda Peters will do next. This one felt like a debut novel to me in a lot of ways. I felt like she gave away too much at the very beginning, like the plot.
I think if you've read a lot, it does give it away. But I think if you haven't, maybe it doesn't. I'm not so sure.
Maybe not.
I'm having a hard having beginner's mind about that, but I agree with that reading.
One of the questions that I have about it is, what would the experience for a general casual reader be? Because, as somebody who has read a lot of books, and you can see the bones of the thing pretty quickly. It was pretty conventional. I think one of the things that it has going for it is that it's the kind, like, you can give this book to someone who is open to exploring, you know, some stories about, like, the more complicated elements of North American, like, colonial history and the ways that we've treated Indigenous people. And it's more easily accessible than trying to hand somebody, like, a big work of nonfiction about that, or even a novel that feels like it is about that issue and might feel like preachy or polemic, like wrapping all of this in a small, intimate, personal story is powerful in that way. I don't know that it cracks what I think of as, like, the books that explain 2023 or the most important books of the year. I understand the celebration around it. But I also feel like a lot of that is a vote for Amanda Peters's career, not necessarily just this one book.
So yeah, hard to know. Hard to know. I mean, a disappeared kid does a lot of narrative work for you, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, and it's hard to know. I think it's done carefully and expertly, and I enjoyed reading it. But I agree with you. Like, is it going to be one of the 12? That's a high bar, man. Because we've got some cleanup hitters coming. Like, the way this fell, get ready for the next five. Because let's get through it. And I think these are going to be easy for us, frankly. Up first, she's not old enough to be called the matriarch, really, but I think if you're making a list of the most important, highest profile, most well-known writers of literary fiction in the English-speaking world, it's hard to think of who you'd pick in a theoretical draft like that above Zadie Smith. Her new book, The Fraud, came out this fall. You and I, let's see, this show will come out before our Patreon episode for the Book Riot podcast. We're talking about our favorites of the year. It was, well, you could hear us talk about, this was way up there in trying to figure out our favorite book of the year. I'm going to assume for now that this is an easy yes for you.
Yep. This is one that goes on the list whether people actually read it or not.
I mean, let's just chug. Can we say the same thing about The Vaster Wilds by Lauren Groff?
Yeah, yes.
Okay. Can we say the same thing about Let Us Descend by one Jesmyn Ward?
I am a yes on that as well.
Okay. Can we say a similar but different thing about The Wager by David Gran?
Ooh, maybe.
Maybe. Tell me why the maybe. This book sold, got reviewed extremely well. He's out there. Is it a bigger deal that there's a new David Gran if Killers ain't out there?
I think this is a narrower readership than some of the previous David Gran books. Yeah. Like,
it's still a bigger readership than The Fraud, to be honest.
That's true. But The Fraud is doing, like, big cultural analysis stuff that I think everybody would benefit from.
Yeah.
Like, you mean the world how to
clean
the,
how to clean ship poles? Urgent.
The Fraud is like that kind of literature that we're talking about when we talk about, like, books having the capacity to make the world better. Like, if everyone could have access to those kinds of books and wrestle with those kinds of questions, and we could have big cultural conversations about those issues that were productive and not just, like, shouting at each other, we could maybe get somewhere. Listen, I loved The Wager. I'm here for your marooned sailors with tall ships and, like, the infighting and
primal forces of human nature under duress.
Right. But it's not the, like, signal David Gran work I would give to somebody who hasn't read David Gran. And it's not particularly 2023. And we've had all of those other immediate yeses this year. So, yeah, it's a baby.
All right. Doppelganger by Naomi Klein. Her story / analysis of being confused forever and ever, always amen, with Naomi Wolf, who has taken a... Let's say she's gone on a journey towards some places you and I are not interested in going in the political spectrum. And yeah, that's the story. Naomi Klein. Is this a memoir?
Journalism?
Yeah. It's strange. It's a weird one.
It is strange. It's unclassifiable. It's very heady.
Yeah.
I think that the marketing of this book makes it play to the left and there are real reasons that folks like us on the left should read it, but that there's stuff here for people all along the political spectrum. And I would have liked a more, I think a broader, more generalist approach to these questions would have gotten a book with this topic onto my yes list. Okay. I want to say yes, but
it's a maybe.
It is now. A maybe, leaning to a no. The tone, like, it's just, I think it's just too academic, but it is very much about the things that are happening in the world right now.
Yeah. I think there's a version of this book that's a absolute yes, and maybe the book of the year. I mean, honestly, I'm not kidding.
Yeah, yes, yeah. Yeah, there's a version of this that's like as big as Educated by Tara Westover. There's a version that's a big sticky memoir where she goes on all the talk shows, but like she wasn't on all the talk shows. She was on the Ezra Klein podcast. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Someone who did end up making on some of the talk shows late. This is one we had our eye on very early. How to Say Babylon by Safia Sinclair, her debut memoir. She's a poet who grew up in Jamaica in what would you call it? Orthodox Rastafarian household?
It's
fundamentalist. I'm not sure what the right terms of art, because it's sort of outside the evangelical versus, you know, sort of that outside of the U.S. Spectrum of religious experience. Let's put it that way. How to Say Babylon by Safia Sinclair. Rebecca, where are we going to do with this at this point?
I'm going to say yes. I think there's a place on this list every year for general readers of a big memoir.
Personal,
about,
nonfiction,
you know,
narrative. Yeah.
Complex family
Ain't
stuff.
Ain't famous.
Right. Just a normal person, extraordinary, interesting life, got out of some difficult circumstances. I mean, this is similar to Educated in a lot of ways. Folks in the U.S. certainly have experiences dealing with patriarchal, authoritarian figures, complex religious ideas. I think the quibbles you and I had with the book about like could have been shorter feels like a first book in some ways. Like, it's a great first book, but those are the kinds of quibbles that a 12 book a year reader is not going to have. And the general readers in my life that I have recommended this to have all come back like, oh my gosh, what a story. That was really great. So that's going to go in my yes.
Speaking of unusual and moving personal stories, Page Boy by Elliot Page. Elliot Page's memoir of being an actor, of being a transgender person, and all that doesn't entail, came out this year to much fanfare. I think it sort of didn't make the splash that we thought it was. I have to say my estimation for it has grown ever since I finished it. I don't know that I was underwhelmed. I just initially, I thought Elliot Page was going to go for more. I was expecting it to go for more than it did. But when I think about what actually it did do, I think there was choices I definitely understood that I thought were interesting and provocative in withholding even some of that. It stayed with me more than I thought when I first finished. I was like, oh, that was good, but not what I was hoping it would be, if that makes any sense. Anyway, that was my brief 6 months later review of Page Boy by Elliot Page right there.
That all makes a lot of sense, and it tracks pretty closely with my experience with it. I think he chose to be subtle in places that, as I was listening to it, I wished he had been direct, and chose to be quiet in places that at the time I wished he had been loud. But when I can step back enough to think about, like, there are still a lot of people in the U.S., in the world, who don't know a trans person, who all they know of trans people is what they hear on the news or maybe characters that they see on TV. This is a smart and wise and self-protective way, which he's absolutely entitled
and
to.
And maybe even a little subversive in its own way. A little subversive of like the tell-all memoir that people are there for the maybe purient voyeuristic reasons, right?
I thought it was really smart.
Frankly, woman and we stuff, I have more appreciation for Page Boy, knowing what the kind of the stuff that goes on in those other
books. Yes. I think it was a really smart choice to not make it gossipy.
Yeah.
And also, like, he probably could have ruined some people's lives.
Oh my
with the
God.
Things, the stories that he could have told that he chose not to tell. And I think that was smart in a million different ways. I'm going to say yes. I think this is an important book.
You know what? I agree with you. I would not have said yes even 2 months ago. I don't feel like we would be saying yes. Yeah. Country of the Blind by Andrew Leland. We got on a little run of memoirs here, which I think I said was my favorite memoir of the year on the show we just recorded. Andrew Leland's first-person account of living with blindness as his blindness becomes more and more intense. It's in relating of his own experience, but also investigation of what it means to be blind, what it can mean to be blind, what it doesn't have to mean to be blind, the politics and experiences and realities of people who are blind and what it's like to be moving from the sighted to the world of the blind. Moving, beautiful, restrained, thoughtful, a real accomplishment, I would say. I'm not sure if it's a literary accomplishment. You're not reading it just for the prose kinds of stories. It's not like Down and Out in Paris and London by Orwell or something like that. But in terms of learning and inhabiting and getting to experience a world I didn't have much access to, even as the son, frankly, of an ophthalmologist, I found it very illuminating and moving and thoughtful. So that's, I guess I'm reviewing these now as we go. But for the, I'm telling people who it is who haven't, don't
know. Yeah. I'm a yes on this one. I also really loved this book. It's the kind of book that I think can give readers a way into reading like narrative-y nonfiction and memoir that's not like, it's not a juicy, I came out of a like strange childhood experience and a religious sect story, like How to Say Babylon. Like if you say, do you want to read a memoir about a man slowly going blind? Most people are probably like, no thanks. But It's fascinating and so personal and intimate and open. It's a way into reading a different kind of book. And I think if you've got 12 books to read in a year, you want to read something that is going to open you up to some new possibilities. This is the kind of thing I just want more of in the world. So for that motivated reasoning as well, it should probably be a maybe, but I'm going to make it a yes.
Okay. At one point, I think I said it was my favorite novel of the year. I think it was eclipsed by the wave of my fall favorites, but still way up there for me, a literary horror story, but it's not as horrifying as you might think. It has an interesting backstory. Victor Laval got interested in black homesteaders that moved to, I think it's Montana, because they were promised if they could go and stay there 3 years, they could own the land. And for women, especially black women in distress in other places, that was a siren song / clarion call to go try it. And someone does, but someone brings something with them that is both metaphorical and not. And it's a fascinating, evocative story. It would make a wonderful Jordan Peele movie, frankly. At this point, it gets some recognition at the end of the list. I think it's the most accomplished and most mainstream of his books. I thought it was really terrific. You have not read it yet. I think you probably will by the end of the year. So I can go by the reading experience. You can go more by vibe check, and maybe in the middle we can meet somewhere. But from your vantage point, has there been enough discourse and blathering by people besides me to consider Lone Woman as one of the books we include?
I don't think so. I think I want it to be a maybe, but it's probably a no.
All right.
It did show up on a few lists. I've heard a few folks who aren't you talk about how good it is. It is on my end of year pickup list, but I don't think there's enough zeitgeistiness there to make it a yes here.
Okay. Last one. Actually doing pretty well on time. We'll have enough time to sort of mull again. The Biography X by Catherine Lacey. FSG title came out in the late spring. A high concept, high execution story where the narrator is investigating, trying to tell the story of her partner who has died, her partner being a multi-hyphenate artist of some renown and of self-invention and reinvention and self-creation that investigates identity, relationships, art, femininity, cultural appropriation, performance, a lot packed in there. I think in a lot of ways, in discourse and not with Yellowface, and it would be an interesting pairing to read them back to back. It's not a satire, but I think it's one of the more sort of if you carry around a Joan Didion tote bag in Brooklyn, you definitely at least thought about buying Biography of X in April.
Yeah.
And we need some, I think we have to consider some of those kinds of books mm-hmm. for this list. And so that's why it's here.
If you had asked me in April, I would have said I thought this was going to be like the literary hipster book of the year.
Yeah.
From the way that it was, from what the discourse was like when the book was just about to come out and then when it first came out, it does seem like it kind of fell off. The literary hipster book is a hard pitch to the general reader, and there's like enough weird stuff going on.
Mm-hmm.
With this, like, experimental form is not something you want to put in front of the general reader.
Well, if we
in
have blackouts
years.
Already, I mean, blackouts is even yeah. more experimental and borderline avant-garde. So
maybe that's the one.
It kind of washed it out.
Yeah.
Or even, I don't know. So yeah, no,
I think
or
this
maybe.
One is I think it's a no. And okay. I guess for like, just to ground it in idiosyncratic preference, like I am kind of in the wheelhouse of who you would pitch this to. And I
think
keep
that's interesting.
Looking at it and can't quite talk myself into reading it.
Yeah.
So
I think that's both understandable, indicative, and a little too bad for the book. And no judgment of you, just like I can see it didn't quite get over that. It didn't quite get over that hump for whatever reason.
Yeah, okay. It just didn't clear it. Yeah.
So I haven't been keeping track. So I'm going to count our yeses. So let's see. Let's sort them by yes so I can do this easily. We have, oh my God, Rebecca, 12 yeses on the nose. So we don't, unless you want to adjudicate anything, but here are our yeses. The Country of the Blind, Page Boy, How to Save Babylon, Let Us Descend, The Vaster Wilds, The Fraud, Chain Gang All-Stars, Blackouts, Yellowface, The Covenant of Water, Poverty, The Heaven Earth Grocery Store, and The Fourth Wing. So let's consider our maybes. Our no's, our spare,
isn't
big fiction.
Isn't that 13?
12. Oh, it is 13. I'm sorry. The way I'm looking at it. Yeah. It is 13. I have them at the bottom.
I was making little dots on my paper.
Okay. You're right. Thank you so much. So.
Oh, no. 13.
The worst.
The worst possible
so
scenario.
So the no's, spare, big fiction, Lone Woman, Biography of X. Maybe. The Woman and Me, The Guest, Tom Lake, Prophet Song, The Berry Pickers, The Wager, and Doppelganger. So that means we have 13 for 12 spots as a content producer, the best of all possible outcomes for me.
And I was kind of sandbagging at the front. Yep. This is the worst. Okay. I'm going to start with the non-negotiables.
So, I will highlight those.
Okay. Let Us Descend is non-negotiable.
Non-negotiable.
The Vaster Wilds is non-negotiable.
Okay.
The Fraud is non-negotiable. I don't care if people read it. It's staying on the list. That's I do fine. Care, but you know.
Posterity matters. We're making, I mean, if
posterity
think this,
matters.
Posterity matters.
Heaven and Earth Grocery Store is non-negotiable.
Okay.
Oh, man.
Fourth Wing is non-negotiable.
Jeff.
You have to have.
I just really want to make it easy on myself and knock the Fourth Wing
you
off.
You can't.
I
don't think you can. I know you want to.
You can't
to,
talk
you
about 2023 without talking about the Fourth
yeah,
Wing.
Right.
So there it goes. I think it would also be tempting to knock challenging nonfiction off the list, but I'm going to keep Poverty.
I think that's wise. We don't have a lot of social nonfiction, and that's a weaker spot of my reading, social and political nonfiction.
Mm-hmm.
But this is a highly anticipated, important book. I agree
right.
with that.
For similar reasons, I'm keeping Page Boy.
I think, you know what? I agree with you.
Great.
There's a couple things. I've got one. Well, you go through your list. I think I know what it... Oh, God damn it.
I kind of think the Covenant of Water is the one to take off.
I was looking at that. I think it's between that and the Country of the Blind. I don't think I can get rid of Yellowface. I think it would be a mistake to do it. I'm not interested in doing that. I think Blackouts, the National Book Award, experimental, edgy. Torres is a star. I think there's a world where you leave that out and you look like a damn fool.
Same for Chain Gang All-Stars.
I will say the same for Chain Gang All-Stars at the same time. And I don't even think that's close. So then the last three non-lock yeses we have are Covenant of Water, How to Save Babylon, and Country of the Blind. Here's the thing. If Covenant of Water came out 9 years ago, it would have felt the same.
Right. It feels like it came out 9 years ago.
Yeah.
Or 20.
Yep.
I would believe it if you handed Covenant of Water to me and were like, this was your mom's favorite book in 1988.
Yep.
Like, and that's not a knock on it. There's something to be said for like timelessness and what Verghese is doing.
It's hard to ignore the Stephen Douglas style getting on the back of railroad cars stumping that Oprah did for this. I don't know what to do, because if Oprah hadn't done with that, and it's the same book,
that's
and it sells 70% the copies, even, are we even having this conversation?
No. Like, I think I really only finished it because it was the Oprah book, and I
really liked it. My dad loved it. The people I know, civilians who read books, really like this book. So I don't want to dismiss that. Could it be 100 pages shorter? Abso-frickin-lutely. Can you have both How to Say Babylon and Country of the Blind of the 12 It books of the year? They feel like they're kind of in the same,
They are, but I think they both add a kind of reading experience that the general reader might not have. Hello and welcome to Motivated Reasoning.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, we have the AAA Literary Prize winning darlings.
Like,
and we have one satire from a hot... We don't have a lot... I mean, The Covenant of Water would be our one representative of indie bookstore, Barnes & Noble, upmarket fiction.
God, the Heaven and Earth grocery store, man.
I think that's one level above it, don't you? Or maybe you need to be one level of, because we don't have Tom Lake. Right?
Yeah. I think that Verghese is closer to
Tom Lake.
Tom Lake than McBride. Like, it's...
Yeah.
Well, I think I'm constructing a hot take while we're doing this. He writes big books with like multi-generational sagas. There's family stuff to glom onto. And like, don't get me wrong, I loved Cutting for Stone. I probably would have loved Covenant of Water at half the page count, but it was a lot to get through. I think that a book that comes out that's like 900 pages long and deals with the kinds of things it deals with, like, puts on the clothes of like capital L literature in a way that I don't think it actually is. And that's not a knock. It's a good
it's up,
book.
I think it's up market. I think it is up market. That's fine. I mean, that's fine. It's, I don't think,
but I guess when it comes down to like looking at the other things, I don't think you're missing anything from your reading year. From a well-rounded reading year, if we take off The Covenant of Water. I think that Andrew Leland and Sophia Sinclair both give some like additive things that other books on the list don't give. But if you're looking for upmarket or literary fiction about social issues, about life in the world as a person, like James McBride is here doing that. Zadie Smith does that in her way. Lauren Groff does that in her way, like more difficult. And Jesmyn Ward certainly does that, and all of those are on there. I don't know, it doesn't have the sparkle to me. Covenant of Water does not have sparkle to me, and I feel like we're supposed to say it's sparkly because Oprah spent 4 months telling us it was sparkly, but there was like a point where maybe that crossed into like doth protest too much for me, or like trying to make fetch happen. I don't know. I have a lot of responses to something being hawked that much.
Did The Country of the Blind sell 1/20th the copies of The Covenant
of the Water?
Probably
not.
And I think, again, I'm having a hard time too, because I think between How to Say Babylon and Country of the Blind, I would keep How to Say Babylon as an audio experience, as a reading literary experience, as a cultural experience. So unusual to me. Now, I really like Country of the Blind as well. Could Country of the Blind come out in any year? Sort of, yes. I think there's something about Oprah really going nuts in the summertime that we're going to be like, that was one of the book stories of 2023. Mm. That just happened to be The Covenant of Water was the book attached to it. I think you can't separate them.
Mm.
Frustratingly compelling argument. Is that what I heard right there?
Frustratingly compelling, but I'm also thinking about like, the episodes we do for the Book Riot Patreon of like power ranking the big books of X year from the past. And I'm casting to future Rebecca in 2033, looking back at the books of 2023. And I don't think we're talking about the Covenant of Water down the line.
Well,
like we're talking about remember that time Oprah went wild.
But I think that's part of it. Like, we're not talking about Fourth Wing because we love the book. It's like, remember how sprayed edges became a thing?
Yeah, but it's, I don't know, the Oprah love around this book feels like so inexplicable to me, especially when she's picked things that I think just on literary merit.
I think that adds to its case rather than detracts from it. I think the weirdness of the story and the random house that got dropped, and like there's like nine different stories in there. The Country of the Blind. Look, I think we've read memoirs we like as well, if not better. I'm looking at You, Heartbreak by Florence Williams. That if we were power ranking the 10 best books of whatever book, that it's not, it's on our personal list.
I can see where you are trying to get me, and I don't want to go there.
Are you feeling the bishop coming in? The knight is hemming you in from the right, and the bishop is blocking you the left.
I'm feeling that moment where your professor is asking you leading questions to get you to the place.
I am making the case that the Country of the Blind is the one to drop off. I am making that case, and I'm just sort of explaining how I got there. Now, again, maybe we could each have our list of 12, and there's two lists of 12, and that is the one difference, which would be
a list of 13 with asterisks on both of those. Yeah. For this is the place we diverged. Mm. I haven't given the Covenant of Water to anybody this year.
Have you given the Country of the Blind to people?
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Boy, talk about an idiosyncratic tiebreaker. What you personally have given to other people.
Well, but like the folks.
How many
copies
of blackouts did you give out so far this year?
That's true. Zero. the civilians in my reading life who come for just like what's good and interesting that I should read.
Yeah.
Covenant of Water did not occur to me. And like my mom told me, she picked it up from the library and I had to do a bunch of like, okay, I'm not sure that you're going to want to hang with it. Like, here are the caveats about Covenant of Water. Oy vey.
Not sure how to break the tie.
I hear, like, I honor the logic in your argument for taking the Country of the Blind off.
Well, ultimately, you have humored me for 8 months of the year so far. I will ultimately bow to your decision. And now we've made the case, and so people can hear where the difficulty was, and they can say either right or they're wrong, or they think differently.
I mean, maybe it's idiosyncratic, but if I were putting together this basket for a general reader in my life, and that person was going to sit across from me, and I was going to say, like, the
remember,
here's the case
that's not
for
the game.
Why.
The game is you're reading these 12 books and no others to get a sense of what the year in books and publishing was like in 2023.
I don't think The Covenant of Water tells you as a book anything about what the year in publishing was like. It just happens to be the thing Oprah got really
who is the single
about.
Greatest mover of units that the world has ever seen, who has never stumped for anything like she stumped for this.
But it was so mysterious. It wasn't like, we all know and get why Oprah is
I think that
stumping
adds
for
to
this.
The mystery. If she was stumping for Fourth Wing, that'd be less interesting.
Well, so to like go back to Blackouts.
Yeah.
Blackouts is going on there because it's the kind of book that we wish general readers to be exposed to.
Well,
and it does tell
know.
You something
about
this
I think if you
year.
Are interested in the world of books and reading, you're like, I want to get a sense of what the book world was doing in 2020. You want to see the tip of the arrow, man. You want to see what is winning the highest awards and people are talking about as sort of the vanguard of literary expression.
But like, there are plenty of books that sell a million copies because Reese Witherspoon talks about them. And
are
this
there?
Was the big.
I don't know that there are. Rebecca.
There have been some.
Or is it because we always wonder about because of Reese?
Would I have put Where the Crawdads Sing into this basket a couple of years ago?
Yes, you would have.
I guess I would.
The
have
same
had
reason
to.
Fourth Wing's on here.
But I would have. Yeah, it would have had like an apology note stuck to the front of it. Oh. I'm just refusing to do it, Jeff. I'm not taking the Covenant. Okay. I'm not leaving Covenant of Water in.
All right, it's out. So our 12, Fourth Wing, Heaven Earth Grocery Store, Poverty by Matthew Desmond, Yellowface, Blackouts, Chain Gang All-Stars, The Fraud, Faster Wilds, Let Us Descend, How to Say Babylon, and Pageway. What's interesting, if you'd asked me to drop a list of books on January 1st, knowing what was coming out, I think I would have had like 9 of these. The surprises would have been Fourth Wing. Mm-hmm. I would have Poverty. I probably would have this. I didn't know what Blackouts was, but I knew there was a Justin Torres novel. I probably wouldn't have put it on already because it's a sophomore novel. You don't know. And the first one was pretty small.
Yeah.
Changing Ulcers, I would have known. The Fraud, Vashta Wilds, Les Ascend. Mm-hmm. Absolutely, absolutely, absolutely. And then Page
Boy. Yeah, that trio for sure.
Yeah. And then Page Boy. Knowing like Ellie Page is doing a memoir, absolutely, I would have considered it. For the year.
And at the top of the year, I would have said, I hope we're putting James McBride in this basket at the end of the year. But like he became the kind of story this year that I've wanted James McBride to be. Yeah. Listeners can send your angry emails to Jeff at First Edition.
Yeah. Rebecca, what's your Instagram? I'll put your Instagram in there and they can do reaction videos to you. That was fun.
Don't send Oprah for me.
That was. I'm glad we didn't have 2 to get rid of. Good Lord. What a blood sport. To
that was tough.
Very tough.
Painted myself into the hardest possible corner.
Yeah, very difficult stuff. You can find out more about First Edition at bookriot.com/listen. Also in the show notes, you can find links to the First Edition Substack, to Instagram. And if you have a few moments at the end here of the year and you want to give the show a rating or review on Apple Podcasts, do so. You could also hear Rebecca and I talk about the kinds of stories that she didn't think were worth pushing the Coven of Water into. Stories about what's going on in the world of books and reading on the Book Riot podcast, including our favorite books of the year of 2023 as part of the Patreon over there. There's a link over there as well. Rebecca, January loads them up. We empty the revolver and they start putting the bullets back in, and we're at the saddle.
I will be ready.
I will talk to you later. Thanks so much.